Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hey guys, Jesse Green here. Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Possibly the thing that I get asked more than any other is, how do I effectively market my dental practice? So in this week's episode, we're going to be having a discussion all about just that. I'm joined by Alan Dibb from SuccessWise.com, and Alan is the author of a wonderful book called The One Page Marketing Plan. What I really resonate with Alan's work is his ability to take a complex subject like marketing and break it into small digestible chunks that are simple to understand and easy enough to implement so that anyone can get great results with his work. Throughout our conversation, we go uphill and down dale on the subject of marketing, and really we cover a few key topics. For instance, we talk about the importance of understanding who your ideal patient is and how to craft a message that really resonates with them. Alan's going to go through some specific things to be thinking about as you're writing copy for whether it's a website, maybe it's an advertisement, or even a brochure. And he's going to give you a couple of really key and useful tips to make sure that that copy really speaks to your ideal patient. We're going to be talking about marketing strategy versus marketing tactics and where each fits into the overall mix. And we're going to be understanding a lot about direct response marketing and where it fits in today's marketing scheme. Alan is a really knowledgeable guy. He's very generous with that knowledge. And you can see and hear in his voice an absolute passion for all that he does in that marketing space. So as always, I'm going to encourage you to have a pen and paper handy, because Alan shares some absolute gems in this conversation that you're going to want to take some notes on and, of course, implement. For people new to the podcast, welcome. We love having you here. And if you haven't yet joined our Facebook group, the Savvy Dentist Facebook group, please come across and find us. It's the sister group to this podcast. And in it, there's a wonderful community where we share tips, tools, trainings about how to create a practice and a life that you really love. So come across and join us there. But for now, it's back to marketing with Alan Dibb. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I enjoyed recording it for you. So without any further ado, here's Alan Dibb. So Alan, welcome to our show. Thanks so much for hanging with us.
Thanks, Jesse. Pleasure to be on the show.
Mate, you've got this reputation as being a gun marketer. And from all the things I've seen that you do, that reputation is thoroughly well-deserved. I've listened to you on other podcasts. I've gone through your website with a fine-tooth comb, and everything you write really resonates. Before we get into marketing per se, I just wanted to ask you a quick question, because some people seem to have the view that marketers are somehow genetically gifted with a marketing gene. Is that your experience, or do you think marketing is a skill that can be learned?
That's certainly my experience, that it's you're not born with it. I don't know, maybe some people are. I certainly wasn't. My business career started as a dead broke IT geek. I struggled for many, many years till I took the time to really learn that I wasn't in business of being an IT guy. I wasn't an IT technician, but I was someone in the business of delivering IT services. And that was the mindset shift for me. And it took probably a good decade for me to go from dead broke IT guy to someone who really understood marketing and how lead flow works and how to generate revenue essentially on demand. That was a long journey for me, a long and difficult and expensive journey. And so, yeah, now I'm helping a few people with their journey now.
Yeah, shortcut that process. So hopefully avoid some of the missteps and potholes, which I'm sure your journey would have had, like mine as well, because when you're learning that stuff, there's invariably things that tend to go a little bit left of center. So, mate, as you've gone through this journey, I'm curious to ask you around marketing, because a lot of people have their own views about what marketing is. And I'm just wondering if you have a very simple and robust definition of marketing from your perspective, because for lots of people, it's this maze of activities.
Yeah, no, that's great. And it's great to start with a definition of marketing. And basically, marketing is the strategy of taking someone from being not knowing you, not knowing that you exist, and taking them through knowing you, liking you, and trusting you enough to become a first-time customer or patient in your case, to being a repeat patient or customer and becoming a referrer in your business. So it's taking someone from cold prospect to raving fan and doing business with you on a repeated basis.
Okay. So I love that definition because one of my favorite things in marketing is the concept of retaining patients and understanding that if we're leaking patients, it's a bit of a zero-sum game. So as you've gone through helping other people with their marketing and indeed on your own marketing journey, where is it that people generally come unstuck?
Well, they come unstuck, and I don't blame the entrepreneur or the business owner. It's funny, the education system, it's built to create employees. It's built to create people who work for others. And I'm light on experience in the medical field, but I certainly know in many other fields, you can go through 3, 4, 5 years of higher education and they teach you the technical thing of what you need to do, how to be a chiropractor, how to whack and crack backs, how to be whatever, a dentist, a doctor, whatever it is. They teach you the technical stuff, but they don't teach you how to get a client or a patient.
No, nothing, nothing at all.
So, and therein lies the big issue because someone will start their own practice and they're kind of stuck. They kind of think, okay, well, what do I do now to attract patients? And most often what they do is they look at another doctor or what they're doing or another dentist or whatever. They have a look, what are they doing? And it's kind of like the blind leading the blind. You know, no one really has a very good clue and they're all kind of following each other. So really, you need to invest in your own education in understanding that you're not really in the technical business of what you do. You're not a technician in what you do. So you're not necessarily a doctor anymore. You're not necessarily a dentist. You're not necessarily a chiropractor. I mean, you may do that function, but you're in the business of being a chiropractor. And that's very different. You're in the business of being a doctor or a dentist or whatever else. And that's fundamentally different. So the skills needed to become a good business owner versus technician are very, very different.
Yeah, that speaks to one of the themes of our whole show, actually. And I'm glad you raised it because so many people, as you quite rightly point out, they go through uni, they become very proficient and competent at the clinical side of dentistry or, you know, whatever chosen field they're in. And you're right. When I went through university, and I don't believe it's changed since, there was not a single element, nothing, nada, about A, how to attract a patient, or B, even how to run a business. There's nothing in there at all. So I guess one of the first things you're pointing out is getting used to the idea that we're transitioning from being the technician in the practice to being the business owner who is in the business of delivering those services. And I guess from there, other things come, you know. So when you're thinking about putting the business owner hat on, obviously we're going to be talking about marketing today, but the other things you might start thinking about is employing people, building teams, leading teams, all those other things. But again, a fundamental thing is if there's no lead flow, there is no business, right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I had that frustration for many, many years. I was really, really good at the technical thing I did. I was a really good IT geek. The few customers that I had loved me. They loved the service I delivered, but I just didn't have enough clients. And it was a real frustration. I kept investing in myself technically to grow, and I did get better technically, and that had very little effect on my revenue. It was only when I understood that I needed to become a master of marketing and that the best marketer wins every time, that's when things started to move for me, because I saw competitors in my field who were technically far inferior to me. They were giving their clients a much inferior solution than I would typically give, and they were running circles around me in terms of revenue, in terms of growth, in terms of all those sort of factors, and it was just bloody frustrating.
And nothing quicker to you off than seeing your competitor who's actually not that good at what they do beating you with the business.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So, okay. So where do you think the journey begins? So we've got dentists listening to this show, many of whom will enjoy the technical element of being a dentist. And they go, that's great. I still want to be a technician, but I understand and recognize that I need to wear this other hat, this other marketing hat. So what's the starting point? Where do people kind of go, okay, I get it now. What's step one?
Step one is to recognize it. So and hopefully we're there now. But step two is to start putting together a comprehensive direct response marketing plan. And the reason we do that is because nowadays, especially in digital marketing, there's so many bright, shiny object. People are talking, okay, you've got to go all in on Instagram. You've got to go in Snapchat. You've got to get into email marketing. You've got to redo your website and all of this. And people just don't know, if they're not from a marketing background, what to do next and what's actually going to move the needle versus what's just the next kind of shiny object. So to kind of get away from that, you really need to put together a plan. And I liken it to, and in fact, I'm in the process of building a house right now. And the first 6 months were spent with an architect. Okay, here's where we're going to put the pool. We're going to have my office upstairs. We're going to have garage here and all of that. So we spent the first 6 months planning it out in detail, getting permission from the council, understanding, you know, the slope of the block and all of this sort of stuff. And only then, only after we had planned the whole thing out and we knew where everything was going to go, that's only when we started the tactical stuff, the laying of the bricks, the digging of the foundations and all of that sort of thing. So it's exactly the same with marketing. People kind of start with laying the bricks or digging the foundation or whatever when they don't even have the blueprint together. So really it starts with putting together a marketing blueprint or a marketing plan, and then you understand where all of these things fit. You'll understand where the social media component fits. You'll understand where the email marketing fits. You'll understand what the purpose of your website is and how to build it in a way that creates lead flow. So creating that plan is absolutely the next step, because that will stop you from kind of being distracted by the bright, shiny object.
It's a funny thing, isn't it? Because I'm sure you hear this all the time, Alan, and I certainly do as well in my line of work, is, Jesse, what's the... And there's a leaning in. I'm doing this on video for people listening. This is an audio podcast, but we're recording it with video. I'm leaning into the screen. And it's almost like this little whisper, like, Jesse, what's the one magic pill or the silver bullet for marketing that's going to make sure that the phone rings? And of course, there is none, right? There's a plan. There's a strategy rather than a series of ad hoc random activities cobbled together. There is a plan. So, okay. So given that you've written a book called The One-Page Marketing Plan, one of the things that I've noticed when it comes to building marketing plans is they can seem a little overcomplicated or a Herculean task to kind of complete one, especially for a marketing novice, right? So tell us the elements of a good marketing plan.
So you're absolutely right. And I've got a business coaching practice now. And when I started the business coaching practice, one of the things that I wanted my clients to first do was create a marketing plan. And it's funny, no matter how much I pushed, no matter how much we agreed it was a good idea, it would almost never get done. And that's really what created this one-page marketing plan process, because like you say, it feels like it's something very difficult, very expensive. It's like a multi-page document with charts and graphs and everything like that. And traditionally that has been in fact the case. So I created this process where you could put together a comprehensive direct response marketing plan in a single page. And it's designed that you can essentially put it together once you know some of the core components in about 20 or 30 minutes. And it's designed to be a living document that you can pin up in your office or have on your desk or whatever, so that you know the map to follow. So that's basically where it came from. I wanted my clients to be able to create a marketing plan very quickly and very easily. And that's where it came from. And it was very, very successful in my coaching practice. And hence I wrote the book to get it out to a wider audience as well.
So for anyone who's interested in getting a copy of that book, head across to successwise.com and you'll see it there. Great read. Mate, I understand that it's about simplification, but could you walk me through direct response? Because one of the things that as dentists, we tend to love a good design aesthetic. And traditionally, going back to some of the direct response copywriters that Dan Kennedy and, you know, Gary Halbert and all those kind of guys who are held up in great esteem and for great reason, sometimes their copy looks a bit ugly, right? It might be really effective, right? But in terms of how do you marry direct response with something that looks appealing and has an aesthetic value, and around branding particularly, is there a link there, or is it hardcore direct response and no branding?
No, not at all. And it's first useful to sort of understand what branding actually is. When you talk about branding, a lot of people, and if you Google what is branding, you'll get a whole heap of different definitions. But to me, branding and is simply the personality of the business, right? And if you talk about a person's personality, some of the elements of that might be how they present themselves, how they dress, how they talk, how they do business, all of those elements. So design, sure, that's design is definitely a part of branding, but it's not like people think of branding as a logo or something like that. But your brand is the personality of your business. Now, the question I pose to business owners is, when does someone know about your personality or your brand? And the answer is when they do business with you, right? So to me, the best branding is creating sales, right? So when you deal with someone on in a business sense, then you've got the opportunity to develop your brand with them. Now, direct response marketing, and I know you alluded that it used to be ugly, used to be these big red headlines and all this crazy kind of junked up copy and all of that. And I think that's probably maybe a couple of decades ago that was probably effective, but I don't think there's a compromise between direct response marketing and having good design. I certainly invest a lot of money in good design, having clean looking website, clean looking material, dealing with people on a professional basis. But really, if you take one thing away from what direct response marketing actually is, it's you want to be able to measure what happens when you create an ad or have a campaign or something like that. You want to be able to say, look, I spent 10 grand and I've got 15 grand back on the bottom line. So that's essentially what direct response marketing is all about versus kind of the branding or mass marketing where you have no idea. Like Coca-Cola has no idea how many Cokes they sold because they had a billboard on a freeway, right? So
giddy up. And I'm being a little tongue-in-cheek because I agree with you. I think there is this link between branding and direct response. I think they go hand in hand, actually. What I'm curious to understand from that is with direct response, we know it's measurable. We know it leads to a specific outcome. For people listening, there'll be a whole lot of dentists who go, what on earth are you talking about direct response marketing? What's the fundamental elements of direct response and why is it so successful compared to just sticking something up? So could you just give us a bit of an overview of why you think direct response is so powerful?
For those who maybe are new to this, but direct response marketing, it's usually dealing with people on an emotional level rather than on a logical level. There's usually a hook or a headline. There's emotive copy and there's most importantly a call to action. So again, like going back to that example of the Coca-Cola or Apple billboard, there's really no call to action. It's just like the Coca-Cola logo, enjoy life or whatever else. It's not telling you, okay, buy a Coke from here or whatever. And the reason that works, that works for large companies. So, I mean, there's a difference between large companies and small business marketing. So large companies, mass marketing and brand-based marketing, it does work, but it needs millions of dollars. It needs a very long time. These things are planned years in advance. Whereas if you're a small business or you're running a small practice, you need a result like right now. And the other thing you need to understand is large companies have a very different agenda when it comes to their marketing than small companies. Large companies have an agenda like they want to please the board of directors, they want to appease shareholders, they want to make sure that superiors' biases are being held up, they want to win creative awards and all of that sort of stuff. And that's all fine. And then somewhere down there is kind of making a profit. Whereas if you talk to a small business owner, literally the only thing they're interested in is making a profit. So that's what it comes down to. And so with direct response marketing, we want to have a call to action. So the call to action might be to opt in on the website. It might be to make a phone call. It might be to click on an ad. So we want to have them, the prospect who's reading the ad, to do something. And we want to be able to measure how successful that was.
Yeah. And of course, in the digital marketing space, that's infinitely measurable because you've got all your analytics and other bits and pieces, email subscribers and whatever else. You've got a plethora of metrics to be able to test the effectiveness of that. So I think digital marketing and direct response marketing were almost made for one another in a sense. So I'm curious, again, from your perspective, having worked with lots of different people, when you see people going about their marketing and you wish you could tap them on the shoulder and say, hey, dude, there's a better way. Because you probably come across lots of marketing and perhaps you see the world through a marketing lens. What's that thing that you see commonly where you think, oh, dude, okay?
Well, there's a couple of things. And I've seen it very, very often where someone will be pretty successful. They've implemented a bit of direct response marketing and then suddenly, I don't know, for some reason something happens. They meet a branding agency or something at an expo or at some event or something, and they kind of say, we're going to put everything on hold. We're going to redo our logo. We're going to redo our website and everything like that. And again, like nothing against good design. Absolutely. I think that's super important. But no one ever chose a doctor or chose a product or bought something because the logo was really cool. They did business with that business because there was something in it for them, because they saw some value. So I call these kind of things playing business instead of doing business, right? It feels like you're doing something. You're upping your logo, you're redoing your business cards, you're doing all of those things. And like I said, again, nothing against those things, but just understand they're not things that are going to move the needle. It's kind of nice to have a cool logo. It's kind of nice to have nice business cards and all of that. Nothing against that. But the things that are going to move the needle are things related to direct response marketing, things that are related to making good offers, to making regular offers, to testing and measuring those things. So that's something I've seen very often. And then, of course, there's kind of following the bright, shiny object syndrome. It's where someone will come back from the boss kind of comes back from a trade show or something and says, "That's it, we're going all in on Snapchat." They've had a great keynote or something like that.
Yeah. It's the future. So, okay, so just to rewind, we said earlier that the beginning process was to be aware that I'm now in the business of providing dentistry rather than being a technician. And step number two was to really understand the importance of direct response as a marketing vehicle or a style of marketing. Where to from there?
Where to from there is basically putting your marketing plan together and then executing on that plan. So the plan is that your strategic plan, you've got your strategy, and that will be, in my case, the one-page marketing plan. So, and then you need to execute on the marketing plan, and that's the tactical element. So the tactical element, there's three major components to it: tools, assets, and processes. So I call it TAP, TAP, tools, assets, and processes. So tools are the things that you're going to need to make this work. So it's your CRM system, it's your website system, it's some of the things that measure your metrics and things like that. Then there's your assets. And that's probably the hardest thing to put together. But the cool thing about it is once you've done it, it's just maintenance. And by assets, I mean, it's things like your video content, it's your audio content, it's your website content, it's some of your sales letters, it's some of the follow-up letters and things like that that you create. So I've got a concept that I teach, and it's basically that income comes from assets. And finance guys understand this very well. You know, if you own a rental property or if you own shares, you expect to get dividends from your shares, or you expect to get rent from your rental property. So people understand that income comes from assets. But the exact same thing is true in marketing. So income comes from your marketing assets. So you need to spend some good time creating your marketing assets. And then once you've done that, a very important thing is obviously to deploy your tools and your assets. And you do that through processes. And the processes are the things that you do on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, on a quarterly basis. And examples of this might be every week we do a blog post. Every month we send appointment reminders to all our clients. Every quarter we might send, I don't know, a gift basket to our top 10% of clients or something like that. Whatever it is, I'm just making things up there. But once you put processes in place, and especially where those processes do not depend on the business owner, that's when you're really going to have your marketing system pumping.
I really love that, mate, because I think there's a couple of really useful and practical things you just shared there. So the TAP process is really powerful. I think what you've outlined there. So for people listening, I'd encourage you just hit pause right now and go back and listen to what Alan just said about TAP, because I really agree that income does follow assets. And for people who have listened to our podcast for a while, that's a phrase that we use regularly as well. But the tools, assets, and process part, I really resonate with Alan, because the key thing there, which I really like, is it's building a marketing system. It's not a series of ad hoc, spur of the moment, this week Snapchat's hot, so I'm going to blow $2,000 on some ads for whatever it is, right? So as you said, it started with that strategy, the plan, and then you've taken the actions, you know, the tools, assets, and processes, and turned that into your action plan. So one of the things that you've outlined there is, you haven't perhaps used this word, but I'm going to use the word, is being systematic in your approach and consistent in your approach. So is that something that you think is key then to ongoing marketing success, is to be able to be systematic in it?
It's absolutely the key. So I've seen it so many times where someone the guy who is kind of mediocre at marketing but does it consistently will outrun the guy who's kind of a marketing genius and just does it sporadically. So I've seen it so many times. People think that marketing belongs in the kind of creative realm. They think of this creative genius coming up with a campaign and wowing everybody, and that's not the case at all. I've found that marketing is very much a systematic process. It's almost in the realm of people who are more geeky than creative. I mean, there is a creative element, of course, but the guys and gals, of course, who are consistent will always beat the people who are kind of just very creative and just do it very sporadically. So absolutely consistency is the key.
Yeah, cool. And you mentioned, again, creating offers in there. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about offers that convert. And of course, I understand that there's no one size fits all formula for an offer that converts. But if there was a structure to an offer that converts, I'm just wondering what you see as the elements of good offers.
The elements of good offers are things that are kind of the prospect is thinking about. So I like to think about whenever I'm crafting a campaign for a particular market, I like to think about what is that prospect kind of sitting up in bed at 3 a.m. worrying about? What's on their mind? And especially in the medical realm, whether that be dentistry or anything else, I mean, that's pretty easy. I mean, usually it's an ailment of some sort. And so you really want to understand what's the conversation going on in the mind of the prospect? What are they concerned about? What are their fears? What are their frustrations? What are their hopes? So tapping into that, if you can hit that, then that's going to be the start of a very, very powerful offer. So in my market, for example, I led with the one-page marketing plan as the title of my book. And I did that because I knew it was an offer that converted because I used it with my own clients. I used it when I was speaking from stage and I got a very, very good response. So I knew that it would be a book that would sell very well. And that has certainly been the case. So it's also a matter of testing and measuring, because sometimes, as experienced as I am in marketing, sometimes I will think that something's going to convert really well and it doesn't. And then other times I will think, I'm not sure if this is going to go really well, but I'll try it. And then it blows up. And so it's so important to let the market tell you what's converting rather than you kind of just thinking and sort of going all in. So test small, get a result, and then go big.
Yeah, because we all tend to fall in love with our own ideas, right? This is going to be epic. And of course, you know, the market might see it that way, or they might go, not so epic, Jesse. And the market tests don't bear that out. So again, of course, the only truth is the result. And I guess that's what you're saying. So Alan, I wanted to ask you a little bit about authority marketing and where that fits into the picture as well, because authority marketing is a bit of a thing, and certainly there's a lot of people talking about it, you know, whether it's blogs or social media presence or even podcasts like this. So tell me where you see that fitting into an overarching strategy. Again, understanding that we're talking in broad terms and no one thing is going to be the same for everyone, but where does authority marketing fit into the mix?
I think it's hugely important, and it's really important because marketing used to be kind of just let's find ways to interrupt people with ads on TV, and previously, a couple of decades ago, you put your ad in the yellow pages and your marketing for the year was done, sort of thing. So it used to be all about how much can I interrupt people, how much can I show up, but it's really now moving towards the thought leaders. So, and all it means to be a thought leader is to be able to create value in advance. So a lot of people say, come see me, pay me a bunch of money, and I'll help you. But now what's working really, really well, and I think what will work for many decades in advance from now, will be becoming a thought leader and helping people in advance. So show people that you can help them by actually helping them, right? So I create probably 90% of my material is free. So yes, I have courses. Yes, I have a membership. I have a book and all of that, but probably 90% of the material that I create is free. And I get a lot of clients. I get a lot of lead flow from that because people can see, okay, this guy has created value for me in advance of me ever paying him a cent. Imagine if I became a paying client, how much more value I'd get. So it's all about show people that you can help them by actually helping them in advance.
I really resonate and appreciate that as well. So again, from a dentist perspective, that would be things like creating a regular blog perhaps, or even a video series might be about how to effectively clean your teeth, or how to effectively clean your kids' teeth with braces, or what happens when your baby's teeth are erupting, what sequence do they erupt in, or how to avoid getting cavities, whatever it happens to be. That would be falling under that category of authority marketing, right?
Yeah, it would be. And I'd like your listeners to also think about what can you specialize in, what can you be known for, and then start think about that little search box on Google. What would people type to find you? So if you're a dentist, maybe you specialize in Invisalign treatments or something like that. So what questions would people have about that? So, and questions make very, very good titles of blogs. So, do Invisalign treatments cost a lot, or do Invisalign treatments hurt, or something like that? That would, you would think that they may be some common search queries that people might type if they're looking into that.
Yeah, does Invisalign really work?
Perfect.
I mean, that's a great blog for someone to write.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. So that would make a great title of a blog post. And so if you can become the specialist in a particular area, become known for that, then that becomes very, very powerful.
Cool. I really love that, mate. And again, just for the guys and girls listening, hit pause and just think about what is it that you want to be known for. Make some notes around that. And then, as Alan has said, jump onto Google, do a bit of searching, see what questions are coming up. Google is a great research tool. We certainly use Google for our own research as well in our practice and indeed this business. But again, Alan, if you wanted to find other areas and places where you could search for ideas and inspiration around that, any other tips or tricks about where you might find some ideas around that?
So some really good resources for finding, it's not for even research, it's just to get into the minds of people. So there are some good forum sites, industry-specific forum sites. There are Facebook groups. There are some Reddit, they call them subreddits. There's Quora. People ask a lot of questions on Quora. So you can go onto Quora and type in almost any question you can think of, and you'll see other people discussing it. So getting into the mind of your prospect and seeing, what are people in my target market asking about? What do they want to know about? What are they fearing? So getting that kind of intelligence gathering going is very, very powerful.
Yeah. And just to take a step back further, mate, I guess something we haven't really touched on, but that is really the ideal client or ideal patient avatar, right? And knowing who you're trying to attract to your practice, because one of the marketing mistakes I see happening all the time is dentists will say, we'll ask them, who's your ideal patient? Well, anyone who fogs a mirror kind of routine. And so we need to be a little more targeted and specific. Is that something you'd agree with?
That's absolutely something I'd agree with. And the reason behind that is because when we're very general, it kind of appeals to nobody. So often small business owners, they're kind of in their zeal to kind of build as much traction and business as possible, they'll start listing a laundry list of services. So we do A, B, C, D, and they start listing all the things they think that, because they do a wide range of services, that's going to appeal to more people. So recently my wife injured her knee, and guess what she's typing into Google? Knee specialist. She's not typing general doctor who does hearts, brains, lungs, and knees, right? So she's looking for that knee specialist. So that's exactly the same. So there would be people in your target market who are searching for a particular thing. So when it comes to dentistry, it might be Invisalign, it might be treatments for sleep apnea or snoring or whatever. So if you can become known, and that doesn't mean that you can't do general treatments outside of that target market. Of course, you can take patients outside of that target market. You can do business outside of that. But from a marketing perspective, the things that you put your marketing dollars into, the things that you really concentrate on who you try to attract, that becomes very, very specialized. And once you own one niche, once you're the Invisalign expert in your area and you're well known for that, well, absolutely, you can start building another niche. But doing everything at once, you kind of lose that specialness of being the whatever specialist.
Yeah, and it's often, in my experience as well, and again, I'm happy for you to correct me if you disagree, if you build one niche, the second niche is good if they're kind of an extension of the first rather than something completely at odds with it. So if I was going to be doing Invisalign up front, I might have a second niche, which is all around cosmetic dentistry rather than, say, root canal or something like that, so that there's some sort of relationship between niche one and niche two, yeah?
Absolutely. Yeah, yes. Because then you can basically reinvest a lot of the assets that you've spent time building. You don't have to start from scratch. You can redeploy a lot of the same assets.
Yeah, again, I really resonate with that. Hey, Alan, I wanted to just quickly touch on marketing to the affluent, because there'll be different types of practices and different types of practice owners listening to this podcast. Some will be really chasing preferred provider market, and there'll be others who are targeting a more high-end, well-heeled audience. So I wanted to ask you about marketing to the affluent and whether there's anything specific to consider in that that might be a little different compared to a middle-of-the-road type of audience.
Very much so. And I like that you've brought that up, because in the various businesses that I've done, I've had high-end clients and I've had lower-end clients. And like when I think back to one of my previous technology businesses, I had clients who were worth maybe a few hundred dollars a month. And then I had clients who were worth maybe tens of thousands of dollars a month. And the clients that were worth tens of thousands of dollars a month, they paid their bills on time, they never complained, didn't have hassles. They essentially paid their bill, got their service, and we hardly ever heard from them. The clients who were worth a few hundred dollars a month, they were the ones we got the most complaints from. They always paid late, we had to chase them, they weren't happy with something or other. So And I guess in a dental practice, it would also be a function of the geographic area you're in. If you're in a lower socioeconomic area, you may not have the option but dealing with lower end clients. But if you've got the opportunity, absolutely targeting the affluent is very, very powerful, because the affluent really want convenience, right? So, and I have to say, in dealing with medical practices as a patient, one of the things that really irritates me the most, I make an appointment, I show up, and then I, despite me making an appointment, I've got to wait half an hour in the waiting room, right? So I would pay more if the person seeing me would just see me on time, because to the affluent, they understand that time is their most valuable resource, right? You can't get more time, but you can get more money, right? So having that in mind, so treating the affluent in terms of preserving their time and convenience factor, they will pay more for that.
Yeah. I actually think one of the ideas we've been toying with in our own practice, mate, was the idea of a membership within the dental practice and the idea of having a front of queue service, so that we had some idea around reserving certain spots of the day and making them available to our more affluent, higher paying clients, and really, you know, using a front of queue kind of filter in that spec. So it's an idea we're playing with at the moment. We haven't implemented it yet, but it's just on our drawing board. So
I love it. And one of the things I've even thought of, I'm not in the medical field and I don't know if this would work, but a membership only clinic. You've got to be a member to be part of the clinic, and I think that would be powerful.
Yeah, I think so too, mate. And it's something, again, we've spoken about in our own business as well. And yeah, there's a whole lot of things. You know, I love the idea of crowdfunding a clinic, to be honest with you, because then you build the client base as you go. That's a conversation for another time, perhaps. Anyway, Alan, we've covered a fair bit of territory. And firstly, let me say thank you. I really do appreciate not just your time today, but your wisdom and your insights. It's really important. And what you've given the audience today is a really good fundamental step-by-step process to follow. Get awareness that you're in the business of selling dentistry. Understand that that's a different hat and process. Understand that, of course, we need to have a marketing plan. Understand that we've got the taps. You know, we've got the tools, the assets, and the processes. And, of course, it's about consistency. So, again, some really wonderful things. And you also mentioned, obviously, a big influence of direct response marketing there. What I wanted to ask you as we wrap up today, what, from your perspective, if you were starting out new again, and again, given that some of these audience members will be starting new, what advice would you give yourself, like now that you're 10 years into your marketing journey or even more, if you could give yourself some advice 10 years ago, what advice would you give yourself, your younger self?
It'd be a couple of things. So it'd be start with a plan. So we've obviously covered that already. Start making offers. So rather than working on some of the technical stuff, start working on creating powerful offers. And the third thing is would be around starting to become a thought leader as early as you possibly can. So I should have written that book 10 years ago. I mean, I wrote it a couple of years ago, but I really should have written it 10 years ago. So start becoming a thought leader as early as possible, because really now with the amount of commoditization of almost everything, that's the one thing that's very, very difficult for anyone to kind of copy or commoditize or anything, for you to be known as the specialist in whatever area that you decide to be. So I think that's very, very powerful.
Yeah, mate, that's really wonderful. Thank you. Alan, once again, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to come and hang with us, mate. It's like a masterclass in marketing sitting here talking to you. So thank you. For anyone listening who you want to go and get a copy of Alan's book, which I'd really recommend you do, head across to successwise.com, grab a copy of the book, because it's a really good read. It's a wonderful resource for you. I know that if you trawl through Alan's website, there's heaps of other goodies there as well. So please go and check all that out. Once again, Alan, from all of us here, thank you. And we look forward to catching up with you around the traps, mate. You're a gem.
Thanks, Jesse. It was a pleasure to be on the show.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.